We've all had that one co-worker who drives us absolutely mad. And Baz and Bear Hay had his. Working at Target was hard sometimes, but one day when he walked into the lunchroom and found that one of his co-workers had stolen his lunch from the fridge, that was his final straw. He'd already had a hell of a lot to deal with lately. Immigration enforcement in the US were after him. He was about to be deported from the country. And his lunch being stolen from the communal fridge was enough to tip him over the edge, driving him to murder. When he was sentenced, the killer himself asked for the longest possible sentence because he knew just how dangerous he was. He said he could have murdered anyone that day. Even a four-year-old child. Today, we're talking about a murder with a 100-year prison sentence, all because of a stolen lunch. Before we get into the case, I just want to give my usual disclaimer that I mean absolutely no disrespect to anyone that I talk about in this video. Everything that I'm about to say is publicly available information that myself and my team have found online, and in other places. Actually, this case has been one hell of a case to research. You'll see as we go through it, but hats off to my research team for real. But as I was saying, it's all publicly available information that myself and my team have found and compiled into this video. We're going to be covering some sensitive topics today, including deportation and issues with immigration forces. So if any of that sounds too intense or triggering for you, then I would recommend clicking out of the video now. Hopefully I'll get to see you some other time with a different video that's maybe a little bit easier for you to watch. But until then, look after yourself. While we make every effort to fact check our sources and make sure that all of our information is correct, no action should be taken in reliance upon the information in this video. And I want to take this opportunity to remind you that these are real people's lives that we're talking about, so please do keep it all kind and respectful in the comments. I know I don't even need to ask you guys that. You're a brilliant community. I'm so proud to have you every single day, but just a reminder, and if there's anyone new here, we are kind of respectful around here, so please keep in with our community. All opinions about to be stated in this video are mine and mine alone. And with all that being said, let's find out how this murderer was sentenced to 100 years behind bars. That's one of the most insane sentences I've ever heard of. That was actually the first thing I learned about this case. I saw the headline, like 100 years in prison, and I was like, I have to cover that. So today's case takes place in Fairfax County, Virginia in April 2021. And I know hearing that year will have sent a lot of shivers down the spines of the audience because that was COVID times. A time we all love to reminisce on, hey? It was the worst few years of a lot of our lives. We've actually done two COVID time true crime cases in a row, so I'm really sorry for that. That was unintentional. It's bringing back a lot of memories of like Zoom parties and whipped coffee on TikTok, you know? But in April 2021, at the time of this case, COVID-19 was still spreading like crazy around the whole world. In a lot of places, you could already get the vaccine at this point in time, but there were still so many people dying every single day. Over 1,000 deaths from COVID alone in the US every single day at this point in time. But despite that, despite how dangerous it was, still, people were forced to try to get back to their normal life. People were going back to work, people were meeting up with friends again, all while this disease lurked in the shadows. It could affect anyone at any time. It was such a scary time to live through, wasn't it? Like, most of us had older or higher risk relatives at home that we were really concerned for, but you were also worried that you might be carrying the disease home to them. And then there were the essential workers that literally put their health on the line every single day, doing all the jobs that needed doing to keep society running throughout this chaos. So in the US, that was places like Walmart, Costco, and Target, the scene of our crime today. I know a lot of you are actually watching my channel from the US. I see you guys, and howdy. And sorry, if you're from America, you probably already know what Target is, but for people that don't live near, let me explain, because Target is like my own personal Disneyland. I love that place. It's one of those stores in the US that sells absolutely everything. Food, clothes, toys, home improvement stuff, literally just chuffing anything. You can get your glasses there. The first time I ever went to a Target in my whole entire life, I actually vlogged the experience because I was like, this is so monumental to me. And honestly, I had the best day ever. Cheeky shout out to my second channel. If you do want to see a bit more of my like personal life and you want to see what the inside of a Target is like, go watch that video. But throughout the pandemic, Target was really good to their workers. They had quite a high minimum wage, especially compared to other similar stores like Walmart. Even now, at some Target locations, their minimum wage is up to $24 an hour. And just to put that into perspective, some of the minimum wages throughout America, because it's different in every state, isn't it? The minimum wage in Washington, D.C. is $17, and in Wyoming, it's just over $7. Whereas Target workers in some locations are getting $24 an hour minimum. And the Target location that we're going to be zoning in on today is in Bailey's Crossroads in Virginia. That is the location that 22-year-old Bazem Berhe worked. He was originally from Ethiopia, and I'm not entirely sure how long he'd been in the US at this point in time. In fact, we're not even sure that he was a legal immigrant. Because at the time of this case, immigration enforcement were on his ass. And we can't say why for sure, but again, it's been speculated that he was in the US illegally. But regardless of the reason why, we do know for sure that he was being threatened with deportation, and he was really, really distressed over this whole situation. In fact, he was very, very angry. You know how people deal with distressing situations in different ways? Some people shut down, some people cry, some people get angry. And I think Bazem Berhe fell into that last group. He seemed to be a big ball of seething anger at this point in time. He was snappy. He was on the edge of a furious breakdown at any moment. It was like he was a ticking time bomb, and all it would take for him to explode was just one more minor inconvenience. The fateful day was April 14th, 2021. Bazem turned up at work and clocked in for his shift at Target as any other normal day. Everything was going fine, work was pretty normal. That was until lunchtime, when Bazem walked into the staff lunchroom and discovered something that would push him over the edge. When he opened up the communal fridge, he noticed that the lunch that he had brought in for himself and left in there earlier was now gone. Someone had to have taken it, because he knew damn well that he had brought it in and put it in that fridge for later. So someone must have stolen it and eaten it without any regard for Bazem and what he was gonna do. For him, this was like a mini betrayal from the co-workers that he thought he could trust. But it turns out he couldn't. As if he wasn't going through enough at this point in his life, he is being told that the life that he had built for himself in the US was about to be stripped from him, and he was going to be kicked out to his own country. And now this. He's just trying to get on with his day-to-day life while dealing with the most stressful thing in the world, deportation. And now the lunch that he was going to eat, he was hungry, it was gone. But I do want to remind you of the headspace that he was in at this point in time. He was incredibly sensitive, incredibly. And he did not react to a stolen lunch the way that any normal person would. Like, yeah, it's really annoying that someone would steal your lunch and not say anything, and now you're left without a lunch. That is really fucking annoying. I would be angry too, but Bazem was above and beyond angry. Let's take a second to consider what should have happened at this point in time. Put yourself in his shoes for a second. You've just gone into work, you've gone to the communal fridge, your lunch has been stolen. What do you do? Do you A, send a very passive-aggressive text into the work group chat to vent your frustrations? Do you B, report this to your manager, report it to higher-ups so that it can be resolved in a professional way? Or do you C, start planning your murderous revenge against the thief? Well, I'm sure all of you lovely people would pick one of the first two options. Not Bazem. That's right. His solution to having his lunch stolen at work was to start planning a murder. It was as if this one tiny minor inconvenience had just flipped his switch completely, and now there was no getting it back. There was no calming him down. That lunch stealer had betrayed him and unknowingly been the straw that broke the camel's back for Bazem. They were gonna pay for this, with their life. But one thing that kind of gets me about this is, remember where they worked, Target. Famously, the place that sells absolutely everything in the whole entire world, including a replacement for the stolen lunch. And yes, I know it's very, very annoying to have something stolen from you, especially something that you had prepared for yourself in anticipation of needing it later. You know, your lunch, food. Humans need food. Humans get hungry, they get cranky. I get it. It is such an annoying situation to be in. And it would be even more annoying to have to purchase a second lunch after you've already bought the one. But, hear me out, would that not be easier than committing murder? Yeah, I think so. Becoming a murderer to solve your problems is insane. To solve your, like, grievances with your co-workers over a stolen lunch is insane. But I guess that just goes to show how much he wasn't in his right mind at that point in time. It didn't even cross his mind to go and get a new lunch. His mind just went straight to murder. It's like his anger bar had been filled right to the top. And where most of us would try to deal with that with, you know, healthier means like journaling or venting to friends or even like screaming into a pillow, Barzan didn't choose any of those things. He actively chose violence. He actively chose to harm another person. When the next day rolled round, Barzan drove to Target and walked into his workplace, but not to start a shift. He was actually there as a customer to buy things. He wandered around the store and proceeded to purchase just three items. Three weapons, two knives, and a hammer. How this didn't raise any suspicion with his co-workers, we'll never know. Because this is a suspicious purchase, come on. Knives and hammers are used for completely different things. I feel like their only overlap is being used as weapons. So when three weapons are being bought with absolutely nothing else, how was that not flagged in some kind of way? I don't know though, after all, America is the land of the free and there's a big feeling in the US that their business is their own. If a guy wants to go out and buy a big hammer and some knives, then that should be his right to do so. I don't know, that all just feels very American to me, so I don't know. But I feel like in the UK, that would have definitely been flagged. But like I say, I'm not from America. I don't really know how that kind of thing goes down. But anyway, after completing his sinister purchase, Barzan then jumped back in his car, went back to his house, which was about 20 miles away in Alexandria. And he spent the next few days holed up in his house, quote unquote, training for murder. And I wish I could tell you what training meant. We have tried to dig into that so much. We don't actually know specifically what he was getting up to in his house for those few days, but he will have just been ruminating on that stolen lunch and all of the anger that he was feeling. It would have been very, very unhealthy for him to lock himself away from the rest of the world like that, feeling so distressed and angry. And I think that's part of the reason that this ended the way that it did. Had he been, I don't know, talking and socializing and getting some fresh air and touching grass in the days following this, then it might not have ended how it did. But unfortunately, it didn't go like that. Barzan spent days at his home training for the murder that he was about to commit. And by April 17th, he was ready. He had spent three whole days. Since his precious lunch was stolen, he had spent 3 days thinking about how he was gonna act out his revenge. And now he was finally ready. So he set off to Bailey's Crossroads Target in the middle of the night. It was like the early hours of the morning. And his plan was to just lay in wait until one of his co-workers arrived for the very first shift of the day. And then he would attack. We truly don't know if Barzan was trying to target a specific co-worker or if he was just looking to hurt someone, anyone. I don't know if you can tell, but there's not that much information out there on this case. It's because of a bunch of legal stuff that would take way too long to explain, and not gonna lie, I don't fully understand it myself. But our researcher Alex explained to me that obviously there's like dozens and dozens, nearly 100 counties in Virginia. I googled this, that's insane to me. I don't know what I was expecting, but it wasn't nearly 100. And out of all of those counties, Fairfax County, where this murder took place, is one of the only ones that doesn't make their court records available to the public. So this was really easy. This was a really easy one to research. There's similar systems like all over the US, and it's not just annoying for researchers and true crime girlies like me that are just interested in the information, but it's also just a bit shit because criminals get charged and put away so that the community is protected, right? So doesn't that community have the right to know about the crimes that are happening around them and to have that information? I find that very interesting, but whatever. Yeah, it's been a tricky one for the research team to dig into. And unfortunately, like I said, we couldn't quite figure out if this was a targeted attack or if it was a bit more like opportunistic. He was just going there to kill anyone that arrived. I think I personally believe that second one, but again, we don't know. We really don't know. In fact, we don't even know which co-worker stole Barzin's lunch. I don't even know if he knew. I doubt anyone actually ever admitted to that. My guess is that he never specifically found out who stole the lunch, but I don't think he really cared at that point anyway. It was more than the lunch. It was a betrayal on top of everything else. I think he was just looking to get revenge on a co-worker. Any co-worker, because he was just so mad that one of them had betrayed him. So by killing one of them, one was representative of them all. So there he was in the Target parking lot, waiting for one of his colleagues to pull in for the early shift. The unfortunate victim would be 58-year-old Ernan Laver. He had worked as a janitor at that same Target location for years and years. He was a hard worker and a provider for his family. They said that his smile could light up a whole room. He was born in El Salvador, which is about 3,000 miles from the Mexico-US border, but he had since swapped his home country for a life in the American suburbs. He moved to Virginia, he married his wife there in the 90s. They said settled down in the quiet city of Falls Church. They had three children together and they lived a very happy, normal life. But then tragedy struck on New Year's Eve in 2020. Their youngest son, Jason, passed away at the age of 23. It had only been about 4 months since he'd lost his youngest child. It was still incredibly fresh at this point in time. I imagine that's one of the hardest things that some people will have to come to terms with in their life. Their child passing before them, having to witness the death of your child. Most people don't have to go through that. And I'm not sure how Jason died. It was bang in the middle of the pandemic, although I wouldn't want to speculate on that. Their family just must have been going through so much at this point in time. It is devastating to lose someone so young. But Hernan kept pushing on. I mean, the world kept turning, and so he had to keep going. After all, he was the provider for his family, the man of the house. He was making sure that they all kept going, actually. So in the early hours of that fateful morning, Ernan Laver headed to yet another shift at Target. He drove into the parking lot and right into Barzin Berhe's view. Barzin had been lurking in the shadows for almost an hour at this point, already wielding his weapons so that he would be ready to go at a moment's notice. When a victim presented themselves, he would attack. And when he saw those headlights pulling into the car park, he knew that it was finally time for him to release all of that anger that had him bursting at the seams. As Ernan got out of his car and made his way across the parking lot, Barzin rushed towards him, already holding the hammer high above his head. Ernan had no time to react, no time to save himself. The attack was frenzied and uncontrollable. He started with the hammer and he was just bludgeoning Ernan over the head over and over again. And this alone would have probably been enough to cause a fatality, would have been enough to end Ernan's life. But Barzin wasn't even finished yet. He then pulled out one of the knives that he'd bought and switched up his attack method. He started stabbing him now. Ernan fell to the ground. He was bleeding from all over. And Barzin, standing triumphantly over him, had gotten what he desperately wanted: to murder an innocent man to relieve his anger. Once the deed was done, Barzin knew that he had to get the hell out of there before someone saw him at the crime scene. His other co-workers would be arriving at any moment. Hernan wasn't the only one that was scheduled to work that early shift, and plus, this Target was right by a busy road. There were cars driving past as this was happening. Given the cars were driving past like few and far between, it was the early hours of the morning, but still. Barzin fled in such a rush that he actually left the murder weapons at the scene, laying on the concrete beside his fresh murder victim. We don't know who first discovered Ernan's body, but I imagine it was pretty soon after the attack. I mean, there would have been security guards that would start wandering the area soon enough before everything opened up. And like I said, other employees would arrive for their shift. All we know is that his body was found very quickly, actually. By 3:30 a.m., police had already arrived at the Bailey's Crossroads target and pronounced Ernan Laver dead. The investigation to find his killer began, and this investigation would have actually been really easy for police because, remember, Barzin left all the murder weapons at the scene, and there's so much evidence and information that they could have gotten from those. They'd probably have his DNA on them. They would have been able to track the purchase as well. He would have used his own credit card with his name attached to it. They would have even had him on the CCTV cameras of that target location, walking in, picking up two knives and a hammer, buying them, leaving the store with them. They would have been able to pinpoint Barzin Berhey as the killer so quickly and so easily. But it turns out they wouldn't even need to do all of that work because Barzin himself returned to the crime scene and was caught right there, red-handed. I imagine he was still covered in blood. I don't think he'd gone home. Like I said, this was very soon after the murder happened that the body was found. Police arrived at the scene and started to secure the crime scene. And then all of a sudden, Barzin arrives. Immediately, he was arrested on suspicion of the murder and he was taken down to the police station. And like I said, all of this happened literally within hours. It was still the morning. But what I want to know is, why the hell did he go back? Because surely he knew that he would get caught if he returned to the crime scene. Maybe he thought that the crime scene hadn't been discovered yet. Maybe he thought that he would return and no one would be there. You know, it'd still just be Ernan laying on the ground waiting to be discovered. Maybe he thought he was returning to the exact same thing that he'd left, you know? My personal theory is that I think he was returning for the weapons. I think in the moment he had left them intentionally. I think he just didn't think about it. He just kind of like dropped them and ran away. But the longer he'd been away from the crime scene, I think he'd had time to think about it and realized that leaving those murder weapons at the crime scene could pin him to it. My own personal theory is that he panicked and tried to run back to the crime scene to go and recover the murder weapons, but he didn't realize that police would have already found it and they would be securing the scene and they would find him covered in blood and take him to the police station. There has been some speculation that maybe he was like giving himself up to the police in this way. Maybe he had some time to kind of cool off from the massively out of proportion reaction that he'd had to his stolen lunch. Maybe now that he had killed someone, all of the anger had left his body and he suddenly realized that what he'd done was terribly wrong and he needed locking up in prison. So maybe him returning to the crime scene was him, I don't know, handing himself over to the police. I don't know though. I believe my theory. Personally, I think my theory is the best one. Later that day, Ernan Laver's family were informed of his tragic murder and they were left dealing with their second tragedy in just a 4-month span. They had to come to terms with the fact that their beloved provider, the man of the house, the man with a smile that could light up the whole room, was gone so suddenly. They never even got a chance to say goodbye. He had just left for work one morning and was never going to be coming home. And now they were left to deal with the knowledge that his final moments had been filled with pain and terror. As for Barzin Berhey, he was locked up in police custody awaiting his murder trial. There was no questioning who committed this murder. The physical evidence was bountiful. But even behind bars, his violent tendencies prevailed because in October last year, 2023, he was actually arrested again. Yes, arrested whilst already in jail. He was apparently in possession of a deadly weapon. And again, we couldn't find out what the deadly weapon was. This case has been so frustrating. I'm sorry if you have so many questions. I have so many questions. Maybe they'll get answered one day. I guess this is a pretty recent case, so maybe there's always the opportunity for information to come out a bit more in the future. But yeah, he'd been found with a deadly weapon in his prison cell. I don't know how he'd gotten it. I highly doubt it was smuggled in for him by anyone because as far as we're aware, he didn't have any family or friends in America. There was no record of him having any support from people around this time.
But I just find this so mad that he is in possession of a deadly weapon and he hasn't even been sentenced for the murder that he committed yet. He's literally just in a holding cell. And he's still, like, harboring a knife or whatever. Unfortunately, it is quite common for violent criminals to remain violent in jail. And that's why rehabilitation is so important. You can't just lock people up in a cell and expect them to change their ways simply from that.
I just think Barzin didn't think he had much to lose at this point in time. He knew that he was going down for this murder. There was no way he could get away with this, and he was probably going to spend the rest of his life in jail. So he probably felt like he had nothing left to lose. If he wanted a knife, he might as well go and find them, because what are they gonna do? Arrest him? Throw him in jail? He's already in jail.
I don't know. I don't condone that thinking. Not that any of you are in jail and debating getting a knife. I said that like I could influence you to stop. By the way, guys, if you're watching this from prison, stop being violent in prison.
His murder trial began in 2023, and over a dozen members of Ernan's family were there to hear the murderer explain himself directly. Interestingly, Barzin Berhe was being tried for second-degree murder and not first. I was quite shocked to hear that, but bear with, it might make a little bit more sense soon.
Maybe. It doesn't make sense to me, still, but I'll give you maybe a little bit of an explanation.
Barzin got up to speak in court and he started by apologizing for what he'd done. He said that he had just been driven to such intense anger by his ordeal with the immigration forces. He was just so angry. He said that he could have killed anyone that day. In his words, even a four-year-old child. What the fuck? Like, what?
He was just looking to murder someone that day. He just wanted to commit murder. He didn't care who it was, and it makes me sick to think that he would have murdered a four-year-old child.
I just think it's fucking ridiculous anyway that he would murder anyone over something like this, like a stolen lunch.
Although I get that the murder wasn't over the stolen lunch. The stolen lunch was just the last thing on the big pile of issues that he had at that point in time, but everyone has fucking issues. Everyone.
It's just so evil to me that he chose this outlet to release his anger, murdering another person, taking the life of another person. That's never even crossed my mind when I've been mad, hey.
And the fact that it wasn't just like being violent towards another human being, which I think is fucking disgusting anyway, but people do that, don't they? People get mad and they hit people, and I think it's awful. But this is even more than that. He wanted to kill someone, to take their life. Why?
There are so many different ways to get your anger out. Like, so many.
And I think what makes this so evil in my eyes is that he didn't even try any other options. He didn't even consider them.
He was pushed to the edge, and his first and only solution was murder.
That's just the sickest, most selfish thing I've ever heard, that you are going to take the life of another person just to deal with your own emotions. Go to therapy.
And I think this shows just how much of a dangerous person Barzin Berhe was. He sees other people's lives as disposable. He thinks he has the right to snuff out someone else's life just because of how he's feeling, just because he can't regulate his own emotions. It's embarrassing.
You're a grown adult. Like, the rest of us manage to regulate our emotions well enough that we're not murdering people.
But Barzin wanted to commit murder. That is what he chose to do. Again, he didn't care who it was. It could have been absolutely anyone. He just wanted to murder another human being.
And maybe this is why the charge ended up being second degree murder rather than first. For first degree murder, it has to be willful and premeditated. But Barzin was trying to say that him murdering Ernan was quite random.
I personally don't agree. I think buying three weapons and training at home for days is premeditated. That's premeditation, is it not?
I mean, I get that it's not premeditated with a particular person in mind, but it's still premeditated murder. He is still training to murder someone.
Barzin himself got up in court and said, "There's no denying that it was very gruesome and grotesque how I killed that man, but I want the family to know I did everything in my power to kill him in less than a minute." And to that, one of Hernan's family yelled out, "Well, that makes it fine."
And I'm so glad they said something, because that statement from Barzin, where he said, "I just want his family to know that I killed him in less than a minute," That knocked me speechless. I can't believe he had the balls to say that and think it redeems his actions in any way whatsoever. He says it as though it's a silver lining, but to me, it's just arrogance. He didn't have to kill that man. There is no redeeming factor that you did it quickly. It's ridiculous that his mind went to murder after getting his lunch stolen. He could have stopped himself, but didn't. So it doesn't make anything easier for the family. It doesn't make anything better for Barzin that he did it quicker. That is just him being arrogant. I think the only way that murdering him fast would be a redeeming factor is if he had no choice but to murder him. And I don't know what fucking situation that would be in, but he wasn't in that situation. That's the point. He didn't have to murder Ernan. There is no redeeming factor in that he did it quick. I think it's just arrogance because he could have chosen not to murder Ernan, but he didn't. He still chose to get his anger out in that way. It doesn't matter that he tried to make it quick. He didn't need to do it in the first place. It's just so selfish that he did. But even Barzin himself seems to realize this was wrong. In fact, he actually asked the judge if he could be given like the longest sentence possible because he felt like he was a danger to society. He was insinuating that if he was freed, there was every chance that he could kill again. And honestly, I believe him. He doesn't value or respect other people's lives at all. If he can commit murder over a stolen lunch, what else is he capable of? So yeah, when he asked the judge for a longer sentence, the judge gave him one. In January of this year, 2024, Barzin Berhe was sentenced to 100 years in jail. A really, really long sentence, given that there was only one victim in this case. You do see massive sentences like that, but for serial killers, you know? And I think that just goes to show that the court agrees that this is a very dangerous man. Barzin will be eligible for parole after 70 years, and by then he'll be nearly 100 years old. What are the chances he'll even live to see his first parole hearing? He is never seeing the sunlight again. In the end, Barzin Berhe got what he wanted. He wanted to stay in America for the rest of his life. Only now, it was going to be behind bars. Now, I'm not saying that he committed murder to stay in the US, but it wouldn't be the first time that someone had chosen to land themselves in jail because the alternative was much worse. About 10 years ago, a man in North Carolina robbed a bank for just $1, all because he wanted to be arrested and thrown in jail. And that was because he had very expensive medical needs that he just couldn't afford to see to himself on his wage. And if he was to be put into prison, he would get free medical care. He felt that committing a crime, losing his freedom, getting a criminal record was his only option to be able to meet his medical needs. And that is heartbreaking. And perhaps Barzin Berhe could have been in a similar position to that man, because at the time of all of this happening, there was actually a civil war going on in his home country of Ethiopia. A civil war so bad, in fact, that reports say that over 500,000 people were killed. And so what if he felt that landing himself in jail was the only way to avoid being dropped into the middle of that war? What would have happened to him if he was deported from the US and right into the middle of all of that? Did he think that anything was better than being sent back into the war? So maybe he did something terrible so that they would lock him away forever. That is all we have for this case. Thank you so much for watching, and thank you for bearing with us. I know that this one is a little bit like, I don't know, there were some bits missing and bits that we couldn't quite piece together. So I hope we've managed to make this story like cohesive and interesting and make sense and give you enough context anyway. Honestly, researcher Alex has been through it for the past week researching this one. He's been emailing people, calling people over in the US. Like, wow, hats off to him. Thank you so much for listening to Usual Disclaimer. At this point, I just want to say that if you've been affected by any of the topics we discussed today, please check the description where we've left some helpful resources. If you want to hear more cases like this one, make sure to follow Usual Disclaimer on your podcast app so that you get notifications when we post new episodes. And if you really enjoyed, I'd love it if you could leave a rating and a review too. Usual Disclaimer with Eleanor Neal is an Audio Boom Studios production. See you next time.